Got it on KHUM, and it is our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign. And this week, we are looking at the violence of poverty. And joining me here in the studio, we have got Ann Holcomb, a familiar voice for listeners of KHUM. She is Executive Director of Food for People. And also joining us, we've got Jenny Quigley. She is a graduate student at HSU in the Department of Social Work and just set up a pantry at CR. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Indeed.
Nice to be here.
Good to have you here. And kind of like a kind of a sneak peek of what's coming up later on next month with our food drive. Alrighty. So, one thing, Anne, that we talk about a lot during the food drive is the type of people who come to Food for People and to the food pantries. There's a misconception that it's just, just people living on the streets, but this is a lot of people who are working every day and are having a hard time making ends meet.
Yeah, I think because homelessness is so front and center in our community, we tend to think that everybody who's living in poverty falls into that bracket. But it's actually a lot of working families because wages may not be enough or typically aren't enough for them to make ends meet. It's a lot of seniors living on fixed incomes. And a very large segment of the people that we serve are people with disabilities living on supplemental security income or SSI. And the maximum benefit for SSI still leaves you at 90% of federal poverty level.
Wow.
So between 30 and 40% on any given month of the people we're serving are folks living on SSI.
And you guys are a very critical part of our local safety net. And, since the election, a lot of folks are frankly worried about our social safety net. And luckily, the vast majority of the help that you give here locally comes from the people locally.
We're really grateful for that, but we do also receive some federal funding, and we're very nervous about that because typically a Republican Congress has looked askance at some of the safety net services and tend to take the pull yourself up by the bootstraps theme. And that's a hard one because when you don't have a lot of good jobs available locally, people and housing is so expensive and there are so many other factors people are dealing with. I mean, it's going to be an interesting few years and we're nervous.
Yesterday, we were kind of talking a little bit about that, about folks trying to pull themselves out of poverty, trying to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, so to speak, which can be very, very hard. There's so many obstacles to that when you're trying to just survive day to day. And, fortunately, at least, with you guys there, you can at least deal with the hunger issue.
You know, that's the one piece that people can make a difference on locally. I think we've talked a lot about this, but food is typically the only negotiable item in a very tight budget. You have to pay the rent. You have to pay your utility bills. Most people have some sort of transportation needs, whether it's maintaining a car or something like that. You have healthcare needs and so forth. And when it comes down to food, that is a basic human right as far as we're concerned. And whatever we can do to provide people with the healthy food they need to maintain their lives, their health, and be able to work and take care of themselves and their families, that's so important.
Now, I teach at Humboldt State University, and I mentioned this a little bit yesterday. I found it surprising that a decent amount of students, some of my own students, did not have a place that they called home. They would either couch surf or they would sleep out in the woods, and they were hungry. And luckily, there is now a food pantry at Humboldt State.
You know, Jen McGuire and Mira Friedman have been working on this for about 4 years now. I think the pantry itself has been open a little over 2 years, and they're working with social work students and doing outreach for CalFresh to see if students are eligible. But the pantry has just been a godsend to so many students. And I think there's this myth also that, you're going to college, you must have the resources that got you there, that to take care of yourself once you're there. And we have so many first-generation college attendees right now who are really struggling, and they have families who have worked really hard to get them there who don't have any extra, and maybe they're even losing the income of that student who otherwise would have been home and had a job and been contributing to the household. So it's a much bigger problem. You know, we talk about the Backpacks for Kids program and kids at risk for hunger over the weekend. Well, it's a very similar story on the college age end of that spectrum.
Yeah, it's one of those things that a lot of people might be shocked to hear, but it is absolutely true. And it's kind of a vicious cycle because, you know, if someone is hungry and, you know, they have food insecurity, they may not be concentrating on their schoolwork and therefore are in trouble of not being able to stay in school, which would be their ticket to try and get out of poverty. And it's a vicious cycle.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the other part of that, they're not able to concentrate because of the stress related, but also because they're not getting the nutrients they need to be able to think clearly and focus. And even before the food pantry opened on the HSU campus around exam time, they would offer programs for students to provide additional food because they recognized that they were not going to do as well if they didn't have, you know, a good meal before taking that exam.
And Jenny, I want to talk to you about the pantry you're starting at College of the Redwoods. You know, my wife Amy teaches at CR, and again, you know, we've got students there who have suffering from food insecurity. Now, you're a graduate student at HSU in the Department of Social Work. How did you come up with this?
Well, I just my first year internship was at College of the Redwoods last year, and so now I'm in my advanced year. Mm-hmm. And we've been forming this project, and now we're on a grant funded by Department of Health and Human Services. And Jen McGuire and Mira Friedman are collaborating, and they're kind of like my mentors for this project. So it's largely modeled after OSNAP. Mm-hmm. And we also did a study with Marissa O'Neill and Philip Mankus, who he's at College of the Redwoods as a professor, and she's a social work professor also at HSU. And they found similar numbers in the spring study of 2016 to HSU's study of students, that 58% of students are experiencing food insecurity. And 30.
Let's stop right there.
Yeah.
58%.
58.
Yes.
That's the majority.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's amazing.
And even more than that, 32% at CR are experiencing very low food security. So that means that they're experiencing disrupted food intake. They are having a hard time getting enough food. They run out of money. And it also creates a level of stress. So when you have that kind of situation that you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, you can imagine that finals or studying is not going to be, it's going to be hard to balance all those challenges in one day.
So how long have you been working on this?
Since fall of 2015, when I started my master's program, yeah.
And it's just opening, right? You got like a soft opening?
We have a soft opening today, which is really exciting.
Wonderful.
At 11 o'clock in FM 111 at the CR campus. We'll have students can come in and just show us their student ID, and they can visit the pantry once a week. And we can give them enough food to last about 2 days, and we can also provide CalFresh application assistance.
So at this point, you really don't know, you know, how that is going to go. If you're going to have a few or many students take advantage of this, but you know, judging on what's happened at Humboldt State, I would imagine it'll be pretty popular.
That's what I think. I think as long once people get word of it, I think that a lot of students will come in, and we really want to invite students to share with us, to tell us what would be helpful for them and how they can get involved, similar to OSNAP's model. It's really student-led, and that's something that we're also trying to emulate. So if students want to get involved in that project, they can contact me and just let us know what kind of services we can build to better support them. But I would expect that it's going to be pretty popular.
You mentioned OSNAP a couple of times. Why don't you explain to people what that is?
So OSNAP is the program at HSU that involves a food pantry and also CalFresh application assistance. They've got cooking classes on Wednesdays once a month, I believe. And there's internships, that social work internships, and also different paid positions for students. And it's kind of headed by Mira Friedman and Raven Craig, and Jim McGuire has also been involved. And a lot of HSU contributors have been helpful in getting that program started. It's really successful.
Fantastic. And I want to say that Raven Craig has just done an amazing job, too. She and a lot of other college campuses are asking her to replicate this, but she created an app so that anyone on campus who's hosting a meeting that involves food and they have leftover food, they can contact the food pantry immediately. Wow. And they will make sure that that food gets picked up and gets to some of the students. So,
right. That's an amazing program.
Yeah.
Now, Humboldt State has about 7,000-ish students. How many are on the campus of CR?
Last spring when we did the survey, it was about 4,700 students.
Wow. That's a lot.
So and there are a lot of students.
So we can just do the math. If 58% are suffering food insecurity, that's going to be a lot of people.
And I would mention, too, that we have the Del Norte campus and also the Klamath Trinity campus. And their students were also included on the survey in smaller numbers, mm-hmm. but they're also suffering, and they have high levels of food insecurity. Klamath Trinity is out in Hoopaw, right. And I went out there to talk with some of the faculty, and they're also interested in perhaps expanding the program there. So we're looking to grow and to just continue the conversation on what students are experiencing and trying to build services.
Yeah, that's important to mention that because there are many CR campuses, and this is the main Eureka campus that you're talking about.
Right.
And that would be fantastic to expand it to the other campuses as well. And I imagine if it's successful here, it will probably expand to the other ones.
Yeah.
How did you get the word out to the students about this?
Right now, it's just emails and Facebook. And when we have our hard opening, which I should say is November 30th.
Okay.
We're going to hopefully on the radio and maybe on the news and just really get the word out to students. In a previous event last year, we did a silly thing. We had pumpkin bowling, so we got bowling pins and just tried to kind of create a celebration that we're recognizing students not only that they're struggling with food insecurity, but also that they're really resilient. So we try to make the events fun, and we'll also have food and snacks and music at that time.
Now, Anne, you mentioned backpacks for kids, and this is a terrific thing. We've talked about this many times, where there's in families where there's food insecurity, if they have a school lunch program, then they go hungry during the weekend, and kids come to school, glassy-eyed, and this has been to help fill that gap. Is there any thought to, because you mentioned that this is the same thing with college students, is there any thought to, expanding that to a college-level program as well?
Well, I think, it would be a little more challenging to mm-hmm. do that, certainly, and I think that programs like the food pantries on campus are probably a more effective way mm-hmm. To meet that need, because you are dealing directly with the student population. You have great communication tools to reach the students who need that, and there's a safe and welcoming place to go on campus to get some assistance. But certainly there are a lot of students who have families, and I would encourage them to get in touch with us if they need additional food assistance for their families and their kids. Right now, this is the 10th anniversary, actually, of the Backpacks program here in Humboldt County.
Nice.
And we are serving a little over 500 children at 31 sites around the county. And it's all funded by our community, and that's one of the most amazing parts of this. We started off with grants, but the grants were only to expand, it wasn't to maintain the program. So Rotary Clubs and Kiwanis and Soroptimists and individuals and school districts, some school districts are participating too because they see the value for their students.
Now, I know that schools like Humboldt State actively seek out students from the inner city of especially Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. A lot of outreach in Los Angeles, trying to bring people up here for college, and it's been very successful.
Yes,
but there is also that issue where you've got a lot of, as you said, first generation college students who are coming, and may not necessarily have those resources to make it all work, and it's tough. And I was so hopeful, you know, with the start of the Bernie Sanders campaign, with the, you know, making college free and doing all this stuff, and then having him his basically campaign being dovetailed into the Clinton campaign, where she adopted that and making it much more affordable to go to school. And the student debt issue is such a huge problem. You know, especially you've got kids who are, you know, doing their best to go to school and then are wind up buried in debt for forever, which keeps them in a state of poverty again for a long period of time. So I don't know. We're at a period where it's like there was a lot of hope, and at this point it's kind of like, wow, what are we going to do now?
Right. Mm-hmm. Talk about growing wealth inequality. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the biggest predictors of food insecurity amongst our students in the spring was their previous household before they came mm-hmm. to school. If that household was experiencing food insecurity, also if they're former foster youth or if they were first generation college students, and all of those things compounded really just indicates kind of a lack of a social safety net, and just and is indicative that it's really hard to go to school and have these struggles and not have that kind of support. So I did have a whole lot of hope, you know, but I think that it just makes these programs even more important. And another thought I had when we were talking about the backpacks, and also that students should reach out for to the resource centers, especially if they have families, is that there's some collaboration that we can do to really bridge the services that we have on campus with the community resource centers and the family resource centers, just so students know that they can access them, know how to, and know that they're welcome there, and vice versa, that students can come into the college campus services.
Yeah, I think one thing you mentioned that I think it's real important for us to all realize is, you know, say it's probably more important now than ever for us to be looking at this kind of stuff. I mean, this the election happened in the middle of this campaign, and it was kind of like, whoa. I mean, it's like you know here we are dealing with throughout the 3 weeks about I guess what some would consider politically correct topics, but it seems like more important now than ever for us to be focusing on this, because, you know, there could be, and we don't know, it's a huge question mark, there could be, you know, a national pulling away from this kind of thing, you know, from the safety nets, and those who are doing the good work, you know, it's probably more important now than ever for us to concentrate on making sure this stays intact.
Well, I think it's up to all of us to be very strong advocates at this point, and, you know, really get to know the stories of people who are being hurt when policies are changed, and elevating those stories and helping people understand. It's the person next door. It's the, you know, the kid down mm-hmm. the street. It's you know, Aunt Mary who's living on her own. And it's, you know, it's really important for us to tell those stories and have people understand what the impact is. You know, we don't do very well as a culture looking further down the road at, you know, how our actions are going to impact us long term. And poverty is a great example. If folks do not have access to the food they need to maintain their basic health, it costs us, you know, I've read in several places, up to $169 billion a year in health-related costs. That's no small chunk of change. You know, that's really significant. So we have to be really thoughtful about that and make sure that folks understand the impact of the decisions.
And in an era where people are looking for simple answers to complicated questions, where it's very easy to say these, you know, these people at the bottom, you know, why don't they just pull themselves up by their bootstraps? Very easy to otherize them, to make them look like, you know, they don't matter, that they are less than human. It's easy to say that when you are in a position of privilege. And even if you are it's interesting, you know, the position of privilege. We did a whole thing about that at one point in this campaign, and it's like a lot of people say, well, I'm not of privilege. You know, I've struggled hard to make ends meet. And it's like, yes, but you are of privilege compared to other people. You know, look at the different privileges that you might have. I mean, I'm male, I'm white, I've got lots of privilege. You know, but there are always people, you know, that I have privilege over, and it's very important to remember that. You know, that there are people at the bottom of the ladder that should not be ignored, that are human, that matter.
And I think that really plays out in our conversations around wage levels and benefits, mm-hmm. and things like that. You know, how much is enough when you own a company for you to have? At what point do you feel comfortable, and at what point do you stop and take a look at your employees and see how they're really doing? You know, some of the minimum wage campaigns always become controversial around that. Well, we can't afford it. It's going to put business out of business, and it's going to cost jobs in the long run. But it's costing us in other ways that, you know, we're not acknowledging. And, you know, I was really encouraged when we finally got some relief for folks who are guaranteed some sick time now, because that's a huge issue if you have children in particular. I know my staff who have children are the ones who are typically running out of their sick time first because they're home with sick kids. But if you have a job that doesn't give you that, then you're making some tough choices. And if you stay home, you're losing a day's wages. And it can feel like the system is stacked against you. You know, looking, there was some information that I gathered recently from the Insight Center for Community Economic Development. And it said, here in Humboldt County, a single parent with one child would need to earn almost $22 an hour to meet basic living costs. You know, once you factor in the cost of housing and childcare and transportation and health care and all those factors, I don't know too many jobs that pay that here. You know, we're lucky if you're making $12 an hour, $10 an hour.
And that whole minimum wage thing is very important. You know, the argument that it's going to hurt business. But you take a look at the people who are earning minimum wage, and the vast majority are, you know, adults. And, you know, the breadwinners of the families. I mean, the arguments are, this is kids living at home. Why should we pay them more than we're paying them now? And it's just, it's a non-argument. And the argument that it's going to hurt business is the same argument that was given, you know, back in the 1800s with the abolition of slavery. It's like, well, if we get rid of slavery, you know what this is going to do to business? We rely on slaves.
Wow.
I mean, it's really the same argument.
Haven't we come a long way?
So it's, you know, it's something to look at, and unfortunately I don't think this is something we're probably going to be seeing addressed, at least nationally, for quite some time. Here in California we have a higher minimum wage than the rest of the country, and I would imagine that we will probably push to bring it up higher, as the cost of living in California tends to be a little higher than elsewhere.
Well, and I think one of the biggest concerns, too, moving forward with the uncertainty about what's going to unfold over the next few years is funding to support affordable housing. And that is an issue nationwide. It's not just here in Humboldt County. It's not just in California. It's a nationwide issue. And if folks are having to spend, you know, more than 50% of their paycheck just to keep a roof over their heads, it impacts our economy in a lot of other ways, too. But it's definitely increasing poverty.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we are we're pretty much out of time. Is there anything that we want to touch on before we wrap up?
I would just, you know, one of the things that, you know, you do such a great job with this campaign, and, you know, looking at the issue of domestic violence and its mm-hmm. relationship with poverty, and, you know, it's back to the issue of so many women feeling trapped in relationships because they can't survive without that other income, or they would lose their health care. And the statistic that really hit me was, it says approximately 50% of domestic violence and sexual assault survivors lose their jobs as a result.
Wow.
And again, that gets back to some of the policies around time off, you know, sick time and that sort of thing. But pretty startling.
Absolutely. Well, Anne, as always, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Cliff.
And Jenny, thanks for coming in as well.
Thank you for having me.
And best of luck with that pantry.
Yes.
You're off to a good start. Tomorrow on the campaign, Betty Chin is going to be my guest. She has, of course, been a champion here in Humboldt County, helping to help people at the bottom rung of the ladder. She will also be coming to our healing breakfast, which is coming up on Friday. This is going to be at 1531 J Street in Eureka. That is the Eureka Women's Club, going from 8 until 10. It's free, open to the public. There will be free pastries from Ramones. There will be coffee. There will be wonderful music from Anna Hamilton. There will be speakers, and it's going to be a pretty amazing event. And it will, of course, be broadcast over the airwaves as well. So, again, Betty Chin tomorrow morning at 9.